Thank you, Brian, for the introduction, and thank you to the organizers for having me again this year. Last year, I said that I'm not a war gamer, but an analyst interested in looking at the problem of missile defense and nuclear risk. And I talked about a plan to run a series of gaming events here at King's and at the UK Defense Academy. And I explained why we chose wargaming as a method of inquiry. But this year, I return as an analyst and a wargamer, having directed the first war game in May, and having had the privilege of working with an excellent team of very capable people to design and run the game. And I'm very glad to see some of them today. So let me begin by recognizing them. Stephen and Pete were key in the process. Wynn oversees the whole project, and Jim and Rob help with the game design and keeping people on time and on task. Phil has been an advisor to the project from the start, but during the game became known as Dr. Strangelove. and Tom was critical in the adjudication, so thank you. So we had a great team, but also excellent players, and many of the stakeholders thought that this was a very successful event. We did a panel at the NATO headquarters in June with several of the players, and a NATO policy director introduced the game as exactly the kind of thing we need to be doing and integrating into our decision making. And so I then pulled him aside and explained to him all the limitations of what we're doing. And our gamers were particularly pleased that things escalated quite nicely. Players thought that the experience was thought-provoking. And one former Pentagon official said that it delivered better insights than the Naval War College's degree games. Now, I have no basis for such a comparison, and as someone that's been involved in making the sausage, I'm inclined to provide a somewhat more critical approach. So I'll talk about our experience in designing and executing the game. I'll focus on the design process, and I'm happy to discuss content in the Q&A if you're interested. And I'll highlight what's new in the approach and some of the challenges and how we overcame those. So a prerequisite to the game's success is defining the appropriate objectives and research questions. In our case, the timeline looked more like this on the tasking. We dedicated considerable time to this and discussed the changing policy context and related analytical questions with UK and US and NATO officials and other experts on multiple occasions. The tasking was driven by several considerations. First, gaming is part of a broader project which also uses other methods, and this comes to what Eric talked about. Gaming is better suited to some problems and not others. We had resources for two or three games, and in our advantage at King's is framing problems and examining questions that governments can't. So the games should advance the goals of the broader project, so what are these aims? So this was part of a two-year study that examines the changing relationship between missile defense or aerospace defense in the Russian case and nuclear weapons. So the focus is on the United States, NATO, and Russia. And current U.S. policy, so recall current U.S. policy is that missile defense is against regional actors like Iran and North Korea. It's not about Russia, and Russian defenses are largely ignored in the policy debate. So the aim is to develop new theory, but also generate insights that are useful to the policy decisions that will be made, particularly as a new U.S. administration reviews nuclear and missile defense policy. But we faced three challenges in late 2016 when we were finalizing the tasking. The first was a Trump administration with conflicting policy objectives and unknown interest in analysis. The second was the novelty of gaming the strategic role of aerospace defense in nuclear conflict between NATO and Russia. So this had not been done before, as far as we knew, and so there was little to draw on. And the third challenge was designing a game that could be played with both NATO participants and Russian participants. So in this context, we looked for what is the most interesting, relevant, and analytically challenging question that we could game. So the objective of the game is to examine how both U.S. missile defense, but also Russian aerospace defense, affect the risk of nuclear use by either the United States, European nations, or Russia. And here, nuclear risk is the combination of the likelihood and consequence of a nuclear event. And we use the concept of risk as it allows for employment of risk analysis techniques, which I'll talk about later on. We're also interested in how missile defense affects the ability of each side to advance political and military objectives, and are there trade-offs between nuclear risk and political military aims? So in other words, do strategic and theater defenses provide either side with an escalation control strategy that would allow it to end the conflict on favorable terms without the use of nuclear weapons? And the focus is on nuclear coercion and limited nuclear use. So we posited two postures. One, a continuation of the current policy that missile defense is not against Russia, but more robust U.S. capability against regional actors that provide some inadvertent capability against a Russian threat. And the other posture was a significant departure from current policy, basically a U.S. system that is directly aimed against a limited Russian threat to Europe. So we translated these objectives into two analytic games exploring strategic level decision making. We had two game days, each day with four moves, starting with a brewing crisis, which then transitions to war fighting. And each day was intended to explore a different U.S. missile defense posture with the same scenario. And I'll explain how we had to tailor that approach in the course of the game. So we innovated in several ways by integrating different methods, and I'll provide examples of that. But the core design is based on the Naval War College's degree games. We used concepts and tools from decision and risk analysis to tailor the structure of the game forms and to move and tailor the move elements to allow for then systematic analysis of the data after the game. And our understanding of the changing character of war with Russia and the causes of nuclear escalation also affected how we thought about the design. We also employed principles from design thinking, a people-centered approach used in technology startups, to design the game with the player in mind. So in terms of proven techniques, we did several things that which I thought were particularly clever. Each cell represents the advisors to its respective political leadership. The NATO cell decides whether the alliance can agree on joint actors, so each cell is a distillation of that entity. Players do not represent particular nations. And control makes ultimate strategic decisions, and then translates player advice into operational moves to best explore the game outcomes. So that the players don't get bogged down into operational decisions, because it's a strategic level game, and they do tend to do that. So that structure worked very well. Each move had five elements, and a good use of time was not to let the players rest while adjudication is taking place, but engage the players in a counterfactual exercise, reflecting on how they made the decision. And this is not immediately relevant to the course of the game, but it provides important research data. And this is where we employed decision and risk analysis. So decision analysis is typically a method used to tell people how they should make decisions. But we used decision analysis distinctions rather differently as a descriptive and not a normative tool. So we added this to the back end after the players had decided what to do. So this allows us to understand the factors and mechanisms used to make the decisions, particularly what we were interested in was the use and non-use of nuclear weapons. So this method also allows us to understand and be explicit, to understand explicit or implicit trade-offs between the possibility of using nuclear weapons in advancing an important political or military objectives. And where it's hard for players to quantify risk, it's feasible to assess relative risk. And defenses could potentially affect that risk calculus. For example, players can become more risk accepting if they feel that they're protected. So domain knowledge was also relevant to the game design. Our use of decision analysis and research analysis tools reflects an understanding of the changing character of war and relations with Russia. So for example, the initial Naval War College degree structure focused around the mismatch between message sent and message received. So fundamentally assuming that the cause of escalation is misinterpretation and miscommunication. But to explore limited nuclear use, we need to consider the possibility that escalation could also come deliberately, not inadvertently, from a player's calculated acceptance of risk. And so tailoring the forms helped us achieve that. Domain expertise was also relevant in creating the game scenario. The game forms were meant to capture how people think rather than overstructure and bias their thinking. So for example, this was a missile defense game, but there was no question about missile defense, which Steven really insisted on. And we relied on the scenario for context to the players. And I can talk more about the challenges that we faced in creating the scenario in the Q&A. Ultimately, the game staff and players were key to the game's success. And we designed the game not only to suit our research needs, but we designed it with the player in mind. And this was a significant challenge and entailed a shift in thinking, which was asking people for feedback. So design thinking is about bias to action and testing early and iterating quickly, and I think that's something that's already done by a lot of gamers. We played the game with King's professors and graduate students, so this was a test game for early feedback. We generated ways to improve the game quickly, and all game staff participated in that process. But in addition to the test players, so the academics, we ask the future, the real war game players, you know, the assistant secretaries and generals, what they thought about the game forms. And what we learned was that they weren't happy, that they wanted to define their own objectives, that the questions weren't clear. Some questions weren't clear. And more critically, they had no interest in filling out game forms. And to add to that, some were also very skeptical of professional wargamers. So this was really a curveball to the design team, and so we needed to structure the data, but didn't want disgruntled players, and so we had to figure out ways to balance player engagement and research requirements. So we added a new staff member, a knowledge manager to fill out forums, and who doubled as a game analyst. We reduced the number of forums and questions, but also note that the test game players, the academics, had no problem filling out the forms. But it was by getting feedback early, we were able to preserve player engagement during the game. Also, keeping players engaged can mean getting less data, but you need engaged staff to collect useful and relevant data. a mission critical role. And I see Hemant today. Hi. Is that a person writing down what is said and then later summarizing it? This appears straightforward, but this role is often neglected. So we spend a considerable amount of time selecting rapporteurs and training them. And with that, I'll conclude my remarks and look forward to the Q&A.
Thank you.